The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Hart Franklin from ISO on Movies, and you're listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your host and podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 211. I hope you're doing well out there. I'm doing pretty well. I will confess and give you a little bit of behind-the-scenes info here. This introduction is about the seventh time I've recorded it because I tried to fit in the fact that John Orlando Enterprises is my company, and it just wasn't working. Because I felt it was really weird to say that I am your host, your podcast purveyor, the man behind John Orlando Enterprises, and then to introduce myself. That seemed redundant. But I just mentioned that because I am very happy that I have a new logo for the company. That's right. John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, is the company in which the PVD Cast falls under. And I just got a new logo, and I want to give a quick shout out to Logo Labs. I've kind of hyped them up on social media. They were a great, he was a great dude to work with, man, and did some top-notch work. So if you need a logo, I was just checking them out. And if I remember correctly, at Logos with a Z Lab is where you can find them on Twitter. All right, enough about that. Let's talk about this episode. A good friend of the PVD Cast, Will, is going to stop by to discuss AEW Full Gear. Both Will and I and a bunch of other friends got together last Saturday night to watch the pay-per-view that All Elite Wrestling presented. It's the first pay-per-view that they've done since they landed the deal to broadcast their show on Wednesday nights on TNT. And so I thought, hey man, Will, come on, let's talk about it, let's give it a review. I will say in advance that there is one small problem with the episode. For some odd reason, I believe two, maybe three times during our conversation, I refer to AEW's television show as Tuesday Night Dynamite. And that is not correct. It is Wednesday Night Dynamite. I don't know what I was thinking. I don't know how I got my days confused, but I did. It kind of reminds me of a couple of years ago, in which I sat down with the pro wrestling pundits Ringside Rand and DJ Joey Blaze, and I kept saying SummerSlam instead of Survivor Series. So, I don't know, I got things a little bit mixed up. But what the hell, man, I'm human. I'm allowed to make mistakes, right? So, I do know it's AEW Wednesday Night Dynamite. So, but nonetheless, we're going to talk about the card from top to bottom and give our opinions on some of the other, I guess you could say, side stories coming out of AEW Full Gear. So, I hope you enjoy it. It's going to be a great wrestling themed episode. But before we get to the conversation that Will and I had, I need to tell you that this episode is brought to you by World's Greatest Comics. They're located at their new storefront, 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. They have tons of single issue comics, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, back issues, posters, basically whatever you need for your fandom, they got it. So stop on over to the store and say hi to Jeff, or you can even check them out online at wgcomics.com. And guess what? They're on Facebook, just like your grandmother. Just search for WG Comics in Facebook and you're sure to find them. And no matter how you interact with the folks over there at World's Greatest Comics, no matter if you stop by the store or you interact with them online, just let them know that you heard about the store from me, John Orlando, and the PVD Cast. All right, with that, I'm going to take a quick break, and on the other side of the break, Will and I sit down and talk about AEW Full Gear. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Will is joining me here on the line tonight. Will, how are you doing, man?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. Ready to talk a little bit about AEW Full Gear, which is the first pay-per-view after the AEW show on TNT debuted a few weeks ago. So you and I watched it together with a bunch of other friends. What were your thoughts overall of the pay-per-view?
Overall, I thought it was really good. I thought it I thought it paced really well. I thought that created a good amount of buzz once it was over that people were going to be talking about for a while, and it pretty much delivered what we thought it would be.
Okay. Yeah. You know what? I agree too. I liked the pay-per-view. I think there were a few things that could have been tweaked and should have been tweaked. But I thought if I was given it a grade, I'd probably give it a solid B. So let's talk about some of the matches real quick here and get your take on what you thought of them, and we'll just kind of shoot the breeze on them. Sound good?
Yeah, perfect.
All right, well, so they had the opening match, which was kind of on the pre-show, the buy-in, in which we saw Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, defeat Bea Priestley by submission. So what are your thoughts on the ladies kicking things off on Full Gear?
You know, it was really weird as far as the timing that they thought, I guess what we thought, when certain things were supposed to start. The countdown seemed to go on forever, and we watched those same video packages several times over. So that was a little bit annoying, not knowing exactly when things were going to kick off. And then when they did, I thought the match left a little to be desired. I still feel like we haven't seen the full potential of Britt Baker yet. I've seen her several times at AEW and a couple other independent events, and I've always thought she's really, you know, a really good worker. But whether it's nerves or the big stage of AEW, something with Britt and AEW is just not adding up, and I don't know what that is, but hopefully it kind of sorts itself out. Never been the biggest fan of Bea Priestley. I've seen some stuff from her in Japan that wasn't that great. So it kind of failed to deliver what I thought they could do.
I agree with you on this one. I thought it was okay. I do like Britt Baker's submission finish. I think that's a neat twist on that maneuver. I like that. I agree with you. I think there's just something missing with Britt. She doesn't seem to be connecting with the fans. Because I'll say this, a few months ago, when they announced they were going to do Tuesday Night Dynamite and they were going to be crowning champions, I'm like, they gotta give a serious title run to Britt Baker. If they don't put the belt on her right away, or that, you know, she's got to be the number one contender, and they haven't done that. And, you know, you kind of maybe scratch your head and wonder, is it because the higher ups are also seeing that there's something just not clicking?
Yeah, something's off there, and I just haven't really put my finger on what it is. We saw her live the weekend that we went to Pittsburgh in her hometown. Stage might just be a little too big right now. She may still, you know, be working through some of that. So that's the only thing I can really put my finger on.
I gotcha. You know what? While we're here, we're just gonna go out of order because I think we should talk about the women's division in AEW. You know, they had the women's title match. Riho defeated Emi Sakura. I actually did not mind this match because I'll go on record. I'm not a fan of Riho at all. I don't get her the same that I don't get Kairi Sane in NXT or in the WWE. I just, there's something about that smaller, daintier Japanese woman wrestler that just doesn't connect with me for some reason. But I like this match was much better than some of the other matches I saw with Riho. Maybe it's because she was in there with her mentor. You know, Sakura's a pretty decent worker, I would say. So I thought the match was better than some of the other ones, but I'm just not sold on Riho.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing about it's hard to get past, I think, their size sometimes because they don't necessarily give you that. Asuka has a little bit more size. She kind of seems more commanding in the ring. But the same thing with those two, because you compared the two, can they take some punishment? And that's what I really thought stood out in this match, was how much they really punished each other. There was some crazy off the top rope stuff and a lot of stuff that just you don't necessarily expect a 90-some pound person to really handle.
Mm-hmm.
And she was getting tossed around a lot. So that's the one thing about the Japanese women wrestling is, man, those girls can really, they can really take a beating, and they can dish it out as well. But, you know, when it comes to taking some of those bumps, you just think, man, how's that small frame taking, you know, these big spots and still coming back for more?
Yeah, but, you know, cycling back to the whole women's division, and I think, you know, friend of the show, Justin, certainly pointed it out in a group text. They don't seem to know, are they going to play this women's division more like a Japanese Joshi style, or are they going to just do just a straight American style of a women's division? And I think that's a valid question, because I think we're getting two different sides of the coin, so to speak, when it comes to this women's division.
It does feel like they're putting more of an emphasis on some of the Japanese women wrestlers. You know, obviously with one of them being the inaugural champion, and then just the way, you know, they've featured some of these women in past events, you know, prior to going on TNT. It just seemed like they give a little more emphasis to them. But it lacks like an overall direction. I'm not going to say it's as bad as Ring of Honor's women division, but it's nowhere near NXT's women division. That's for sure.
Does Ring of Honor even have a women's division right about now? I mean, let's just be honest.
I don't know if anyone at Ring of Honor knows that they have one, but yeah, they do. And it's being treated very badly.
Yeah. I mean, I think here, going into putting the title on Riho, I just feel like they've dropped the ball, because look, for better or for worse, and I know people might be offended by this, but you come out and say, we have the first transgender wrestler in Nyla Rose. We've signed her. She's coming aboard. She is a beast of a woman. All right. Maybe she's not the best in the ring, but you've made a big buzz about this. Therefore, why was it not just go ahead and put the belt on her? Because that would give you even more buzz. And I know people, well, you're exploiting her, you know, her transgender lifestyle. Well, but guess what? That's going to bring in ratings. It's going to bring in the casual fans. And I think it's not being exploitive, I don't feel, if you just mention that as a fact. I'm just surprised they didn't put the belt on her and then feed a Bea Priestley and a Britt Baker and even Leva Bates maybe and some of these other people chasing her for the title.
Yeah, I think it feels too, it felt too obvious, and it felt too agenda driven to put it on her initially. Plus, I think there's also kind of the Braun Strowman effect if you were to give her the title right off the bat. And what I mean by that is if you give it to her, and then you feed her a bunch of the other women and have her just, you know, dominant for so long, well, then it's like, well, who takes it from her? Because you've pretty much, you know, made her out to be this unstoppable force, but then it's like, it makes it more difficult to take it from her at that point. So I think it was maybe not necessarily the right move with who they did go with, but I thought it would be too agenda driven. Like it would really stick out almost like the all female scene in Avengers Endgame, like just really forced in a way.
Okay.
But maybe not. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, when you have Awesome Kong, that is not, maybe not working the full schedule. I don't know what her contract is or what her agreement is with AEW, but I think that fans would, I mean, I would be interested in that. If you built to that, you know, I'd be like, holy shit, I want to see that on pay-per-view. I really am interested in that, because you have the two behemoth women who are getting ready to battle for that title. I think that would have maybe, for me, piqued my interest a little bit more.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. I guess there are some other challengers out there that could have made it, you know, somewhat interesting, but...
Well, let's also, I'll throw in my other little small gripe about the women's division. Is Brandi Rhodes, we need to figure something out for her. Because I just, either I'm tired of her coming out with Cody and taking a bump that is kind of like, okay, we've seen that and we're continuing to do it. I'm sorry. That's over and done. It's played out, man. And then she's coming out and being the pseudo heel representative. I think they need to clearly define what she's going to do, whether that's in the women's division or not in the women's division.
Yeah, it seems like she doesn't have a real defined role or which, you know, which direction they want to go with her, but they need to figure her out as well as everyone else, maybe at all at the same time.
Yeah, so anywho, there we go. We got the two ladies matches out of the way. As I mentioned, Riho did defeat Sakura and retain the women's title. So kicking off the pay-per-view properly is Santana and Ortiz, Proud and Powerful, which is a terrible tag team name. I don't know, Will, if you agree or not, but there's got to be a better name than that.
Oh, yeah, that's terrible. I don't like that at all.
No, it's awful. But they defeated the Young Bucks in a match that I think went way too long. What are your thoughts on the match, Will?
Yeah, it kind of felt that way. I think it did a little too much of like foreshadowing to set up what was happening or what we eventually all knew was going to happen. And they drug that out just a little bit too much. I think it was really good to see these guys finally go at it. And I thought it was also really good that, you know, when I originally heard about AEW getting started, I thought, there's no way. I thought the Young Bucks were going to win for years on end, you know, just because they're booking their own stuff. And I kind of just felt like that was the direction they were going to go. So it's good to see them lose, you know, every once in a while, because, you know, they had a streak there for a while where they were just winning everywhere, whether it was Ring of Honor, New Japan, you know. And I thought, man, once they get the reins with their own bookings, they're never going to lose, but they have lost a couple times. So that's kind of good to see. And they didn't win the initial tag tournament, which was really interesting to see as well.
Yeah. And I just think, you know, it went 21 minutes and I agree with you. I think the foreshadowing, you know, which that took a couple of minutes, but I just feel like they could have trimmed it down in half. And then that incident where the Rock and Roll Express become involved would have maybe been a little bit more powerful if they had done it in a shorter amount of time. But, you know, I thought the match itself was okay. It wasn't my favorite on the show. I did appreciate the fact that they were selling, which is something that I sometimes complain about with the Bucks. They don't seem to sell things, but they did a pretty darn good job. And Santana and Ortiz, now they're a heck of a tag team. I think they got a very bright future. They've had a great run in Impact. And so I just think they got to come up with a better name, man. That's all.
Yeah, I don't know what that's all about. I mean, obviously they can't use some of their older names, but this is not sitting well. But we'll see. Maybe they change it.
And you know what? I will say this: they did do a very good job of building up this match, and I'm going to say that for pretty much most of these matches, they've done a really decent, good to decent job of building up a lot of these matches for the pay per view. It wasn't just seem like. With the like, oftentimes with the WWE, here's just two guys they're going to wrestle on the pay per view, you know.
Yeah, almost every match on the card felt like it was built and it had merit, it had reason. You know, there wasn't anything that I don't think there was any match, and we'll see as we continue to go through it. But I don't think there was anything that was just like thrown together. Everything seemed like it had some type of build. And if you watched the hour and a half worth of promo videos like we did, you really got that feeling. So.
Yeah, and they did a great job with those promo videos because I showed up at 6:30, so I didn't have to watch all of them. But the ones I did see, they was very, very well done.
Yeah, we saw them several times over in the time that we thought it was supposed to start versus when it actually started. And about the sixth time through, it was they kind of lost their feel.
Well, all right. The next match that I think they've done a great job of building was, of course, Hangman Adam Page against Pac. I thought this match was good. I don't think it was as good as some of their other matches.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I felt, I don't know if maybe it was just in a weird spot that maybe they couldn't really pull out everything they wanted to. Like you said, that other match just went 20 some minutes and there might have been a little bit of fatigue there. It was like a viewership fatigue, not necessarily with the talent, but just kind of like, okay, like this didn't grab me the way some of their other matches have. But Still very good. Still surprised Adam Hangman Page isn't more of the top guy like I thought he would be. I think he's one of the most talented guys they have on the entire roster. And I thought for
Oh,
sure
yeah.
he would be more pushed more to the top. And I really need someone to tell me whether or not I've been saying it wrong, or whether JR and Excalibur just absolutely cannot get this name right. But I thought it's Pac, like Tupac. They
Yeah, that's
continue calling Pac. I don't see the K in there. I don't know what that's all about, but it drives me absolutely insane every time they say it, and they say it 95 times a match.
You know what? I want to know, in JR's contract with AEW, does he got like a curse clause? Because he seems to be cursing a lot more than he ever did when he was with WWE. And he loves to do it with Pac. That bastard. It's like, come on, dude. All right. You've said it like four times in this match.
Yeah, he definitely. I mean, his broadcasting is a whole another story, but it feels like he's called his best matches already. Like, there's no,
Okay.
I don't feel like he's gonna be on the rebound anytime soon. I think we've seen the best that he's had to offer prior to ever coming here, and it doesn't feel like a rebound's coming anytime soon.
You know, I gotta say too, I did appreciate the fact that for Full Gear, we had just Excalibur and JR. Not a super big fan of the three-man booth. Just in general. That's not AEW, just in general. And to have not have Tony Schiavone there, in the broadcast booth with those guys, I thought was a little bit of a refreshing change from what they do on Tuesday night.
I didn't mind it as far as just the general commentary, but it's this new, fresh company, a lot of young guys, a lot of guys that people haven't heard of. I mean, obviously AEW fans have, but if you're watching that for the first time, there might be guys on a roster that you've never heard of. And then we have, JR calling some of the matches. Like, I don't know. His commentary just feels dated in a way, but.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously they have him for the name recognition, and I will say this, I think Excalibur does a fantastic job.
Yeah, I don't mind him at all.
No, I don't either. So moving along with the matches, here's probably the one that I felt was just shoehorned together. Of course, Sean Spears with Tully Blanchard defeats Joey Janela. I know that some folks that we were watching with said that they had set this up on AEW Dark. Is that correct? I think. Is that
You
what
know, to be honest with you, I don't always catch AEW Dark.
same.
I don't like the idea of having to go somewhere else to view the content, so I don't always end up catching it. And I just think that it's kind of the same with I mean, I was onto Being the Elite there for a long time, watching it on YouTube, but then after a while, like, I just got I got tired of going out, like, seeking it out, I guess. I'm like big on accessibility, so if I'm already watching your program on Tuesday, like, why doesn't it come on just after it's over, or even before it starts, or something like that? It's like going out to YouTube and watching it later is just something I don't usually do very often. So I have no idea if that was set up on there or not.
I have never watched an AEW Dark, and as a matter of fact, I'm so ignorant of it. Is it? I know it airs on Tuesday, but it's taped the previous Wednesday. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. So when we went live to Pittsburgh, we got to watch it, firsthand before the actual event starts. So they do film it before it starts, and then they show it the following week.
Gotcha. Okay, that's what I thought I had read, but like I said, I too. Man, there's so much wrestling out there. It's just a
Sure.
matter of, what I mean? We've talked about it, man. You got wrestling almost every single night of the week, and there's just like decisions I have to make because I
Right.
still want to have a life,
Yeah. And it's like, where are you going to find this time to not only watch every single night of the week, but now you're also seeking out YouTube to watch these shows? And then, that's it, it gets to be a lot. I mean, I'm not opposed to watching it. It's not that I hate the idea, but it's a timing thing, really.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. Well, Sean Spears picks up the victory over Janela. I love the spiked pile driver spot. I thought that was awesome. I gotta confess that I feel that this is a guy, Sean Spears, is getting lost in the shuffle.
You know, I was I, I kind of thought that way, but you know, he got a strong, kind of strong push when he did the stuff with Cody, and then pairing him up with Blanchard was seemed like they, you know, they had some vested interest in him, and him picking up the victory here kind of gives you a little bit of indication that they have a little bit more planned for him, obviously, than where he was previously being used. So as much as I like Joey Janela, I thought it was cool to see Sean Spears being used somewhat appropriately based on, you know, I thought he was really good in NXT, and I thought the whole Perfect 10 gimmick was really over. He did some, you know, he did some pretty good matches there, and we saw him live here in Columbus a couple times with NXT live events. So I've kind of always been a fan of his, and you know, once he got that main roster call up in WWE, he completely got buried, and everything he did was awful from that point forward. So to see him kind of rebounding here, picking up a victory on pay-per-view, kind of gets the feeling that there might be more stuff for him in the future. So I'm kind of excited about that.
And as someone said, it doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, Sean Spears is still winning at life because he's married to Peyton Royce. So
this is very true.
We don't feel too bad for Sean. He's turned his life out okay so far.
For sure.
So the AEW tag team titles were on the line as SCU, of course, Scorpio Sky and Frankie Kazarian defeated the Lucha Brothers and Private Party. I'm just going to throw it out there real quick. I think Private Party is a great upcoming tag team, but I'm wondering about the timing of that tag team, because they seem to be very, very, very close in gimmick wise to the Street Profits. What are your thoughts, Will, on Private Party?
Yeah, some people were saying that. I don't necessarily get that connection.
You don't?
I think they're a little bit different in their charisma and mic skills. And I feel like you know, Montez Ford is obviously highly athletic, but I feel like he doesn't necessarily do some of these guys are a little more high flying. They're a little more tag team chemistry moves. Stuff that they pull off together seems to be a little more like timing based and tag team based. And they just, even their gimmick is just kind of like a little more flashier, like LA Hollywood type guys. Where Street Profits kind of, you know, they're entertaining guys, but they're not necessarily that flamboyant. So I kind of see the differences there. I don't, if somebody said that, you know, they kind of remind them of them, I wouldn't say they were crazy, but also like if you really got down into watching some Street Profit matches versus those guys' matches, you would see that there's not that big a similarity between some of the stuff that they pull off.
You know what? And I'll give you that. I will say that Isaiah Cassidy and Marquen is, they're the better workers. Montez Ford is not a very good, he's athletic as all get out, but he's not a very good worker. And Dawkins is the only one in the Street Profits that I feel is a good worker. So I'll give you that. Now that you mention it, I would say Private Party are the better wrestlers. So definitely that I could give you. I don't know. I see a lot of the similarities, I guess, maybe with the two.
Yeah, and for me, none of the three can match Montez Ford's charisma or some of the stuff they do on the mic. I mean, the entertaining and hosting stuff they do on Monday Night Raw and the backstage segments, like that comedy stuff is just not duplicated. They do it really well. They do some really funny stuff, and they were even doing that funny stuff back in NXT when they would do like have them walking into the arena and they would be talking. It's just it feels like a different vibe to me, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, this match, I was absolutely shocked when I looked at the time, because I swore it was like much longer than 13 minutes. I don't know. And that's not that I didn't enjoy the match, because I do enjoy SCU. I do enjoy the Lucha Brothers. But it just seemed like it went a little bit longer than 13 minutes.
Yeah, and I think that's mostly just because everyone was getting their shit in. I mean, yeah. Everyone really got to showcase a whole bunch of stuff, and it made it feel like, holy shit, you know, everyone's doing everything. So it probably did feel a little bit longer. But I would think that's why it was for me.
Well, and then at the end, we got the big surprise that Christopher Daniels is back as he come out dressed as another Pentagon and then attacked Pentagon and Rey Fénix. I thought that was kind of a cool twist. I was surprised that it was Christopher Daniels because all reports were he was not coming back for a while.
Yeah, it was good to see him back. I'm not sure what, you know, what his future is going to be going forward, or if it, you know, he didn't do a whole lot when he unmasked or whatever. So I don't know what his future holds. I hope that he sticks around for a while. I like him in that pairing. I mean, he could even go around with those guys and not necessarily have to wrestle as much. So he could probably stick around for a while, but I hadn't read anything prior to him coming back about, you know, what's going on with him. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, where they go with that forward. But I love those three guys together.
Yeah, they're fantastic. I liked them when they were in Impact, when it was just Frankie and Daniels, and then when they added Scorpio Sky and Ring of Honor, I really dug SCU. I do too. And hopefully Daniels does still stick around somehow in some capacity with that team, because I agree with you. I think he would be a great mouthpiece or manager if you wanted to take that role. I think that would be something that would be cool.
And that gimmick took off like a rocket when it hit in Ring of Honor. That thing, I mean, they just...
Oh, yeah.
It was an instant connection, and it went as high as it could possibly go in Ring of Honor. So,
yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. On to, we've already talked about the women's title match. So on to the AEW World Championship match, Chris Jericho against Cody. Jericho retains. I got to say, this was the match of the night for me. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I had zero complaints whatsoever. I thought this match pulled out everything you wanted. I used to have a little bit of a problem, and I kind of had a problem when it was first announced, where world championship matches aren't the main events, but based on some of the stuff that happened in the actual main event, I understand why it was and how they couldn't have reversed those two. I liked how it ended. I liked how it started, and the cut on Cody Rhodes from diving out onto the stage added so much to that match from that point forward. And then the turn by MJF at the end was perfectly pulled off. I thought everything about that match from start to finish was amazing.
Okay, I'm going to freely admit this. I actually did not see the turn of MJF because I had to piss so bad that I thought the match was over. And so I left and came back, and I saw, you know, the fallout of it, like, you know, MJF going up the ramp and people throwing that, you know, somebody threw something at him. And I just thought it was because he threw in the towel. It wasn't until like 20 minutes, a half hour later, I looked at Twitter. I'm like, oh, he kicked him in the nuts. Oh, I missed that because I was taking a whiz.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
But you know what? I like that they are, you know, they turned MJF at the end. I loved the finish. I thought it's something that hasn't been done in a while. So I thought that was creative and great. I even enjoyed, and we talked a little bit about it too. You know, Aubrey, the referee, Aubrey Edwards, she does a fantastic job. She's the best ref in wrestling today. And the fact that, you know, she threw out Jake Hager, I mean, I loved it all the way around. This match was just fantastic. I can't say it enough.
Yeah, I mean, it was really time for the MJF stuff to happen, I felt like, because it didn't make a lot of sense for him to always be cutting these heel promos, but then going out there and being with the top babyface in the company,
right,
and being part of the Nightmare family and the team, and then cutting all these promos is tearing people down. It's like, he found a way to make it work, you know, as far as, you know, Cody being his best friend and his mentor and stuff like that. But it just never felt like, you know, he was playing both sides of the coin, but now this is going to give him the opportunity to fully embrace that heel that he's been playing already for years and years for people who knew him before, even before AEW. So this will kind of, you know, bring more of that out. And then obviously these two are headed for a collision at some point in time as well. So that'll be pretty sweet to see.
And I hope they keep him separate. I don't want to see MJF with the Inner Circle. There's enough members of the Inner Circle as it is. They're doing their own thing. I really hope that they don't put him with Jericho and the rest of those guys.
Yeah, I don't feel like he has to. I feel like he doesn't have to go there to do that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like he can play his character well enough to not be involved with them, but also feud with them and anybody else that's, you know, because he's cut promos on Jericho and some of those other guys. So I feel like he can play both sides.
Yeah.
Oh, and also they say that the thrown water at the top of the ramp was a plant.
We kind of all talked about that, that it seemed to just be right place, right time. I don't know, man. Look, I mean, wrestling has used plants for years, you know? Sure. I mean, you just go back through the annals of professional wrestling history, and there's always been some angle that has been, you know, a plant, somebody that's in on it to get things started. So, I'm not bothered by that. I don't know if, you know, there doesn't seem to be anybody that's ranting and raving about it on Twitter, but, you know, I mean, that happens. I mean, if that helps to get the angle over or the situation over or to get MJF over even more, fuck yeah, do it, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was more than enough people who had no idea that it was a plant, especially upon initial reaction. You know, your initial reaction is that it's real, you know, right off the bat. So people kind of ran with that initially, and that kind of helped with the, you know, with the entire moment. So it works for me.
Yeah. But now to our main event, which was the unsanctioned lights out match. John Moxley defeats Kenny Omega. I think that this match was set up very, very well over the last several months of AEW action, whether you're talking about live events, you know, or AEW Tuesday Night Dynamite. I thought it was set up well. Look, it's not my cup of tea. I just, you know, for me, I'm like, well, we're going to watch two guys beat the shit out of each other, and it is what it is. But overall, there was a lot of like cringeworthy moments, which I think is what these matches bring out. I mean, I know you appreciate death matches maybe a little bit more than I do. So I'm going to defer to you on what you thought of this match.
I wouldn't necessarily say that. I just happen to be married to a deathmatch addict, so I have to kind of grin and bear with it. And it's something that I've grown to appreciate more. Before actually diving into it, I always kind of thought it wasn't wrestling. I was kind of on that side of it and said that, you know, this is just seeing who can take more pain. You know, there's not really any wrestling involved, and a lot of these guys that go out and do that stuff couldn't work. That was my opinion. But after being subjected to it, you know, going to it, seeing it live, seeing some of the guys that do deathmatch stuff do regular work other places, you know, it kind of swayed my opinion, so I don't really feel that way anymore. Now I kind of appreciate it for what it is, and you know what, it's a different style, but it's also still, you know, it takes talent. It doesn't look like it does on the surface, but it, you know, it takes a lot to pull that stuff off. So I respect those guys heavily. And I thought this kind of opened up some of that stuff. And I think you kind of got the feeling, even leading up to this, before even knowing what we were going to get into, you kind of got the feeling that Moxley really wanted to let loose. He wanted to show, like, hey, this is the crazy shit that John Moxley is about, and this is the stuff that WWE didn't let Dean Ambrose do, that he wanted to do. You know, this is who he always was. And he talked about that even in some of the promo stuff leading up to this. This is like, this is the character that he is. This is the character. This is the lunatic fringe that, you know, you wanted Dean Ambrose to do, but he never really did any crazy shit. He just, you know, a couple times came out and attacked the guy or whatever, you know, that type of stuff. That wasn't John Moxley, but this is kind of the unhinged John Moxley that I think he wanted everybody to see. And I thought at the same time, this was Kenny Omega saying, you know, a lot of people not talking about him as much, I feel like, as they were in 2017 and 2018, where he was being regarded as the best in the world, where, you know, not wrestling for 6 to 8 months of the late 2018, early 2019 kind of cooled off some of the talk of Kenny Omega. And I think this is his way coming back to say, you know, hey, I'm still here. I'm still one of the best wrestlers in the world. And I'm going to show you that I can do other stuff than just wrestle Okada for 60 minutes. You know, here's some other things that I can do as well. So I think they really pulled out all the stops to kind of showcase both guys in a great light, but differently.
I give you that. I do that. I think that that to me was what was the intriguing part of the matchup is you got a guy, Kenny Omega, who is known for his technical savvy and his high flying abilities and being just one of the best, as you said, one of the best wrestlers in the world for the last couple of years, being out of his element. I felt that that was probably for me the more intriguing part of the match. For me, I enjoyed it a little bit more than, say, a regular death match per se, because to me, I think it was set up very, very well. It wasn't just spur of the moment. Here we go. Moxley and Omega is just going to beat the shit out of each other with all these implements and that. The question, I guess, that is on a lot of people's minds, and I've read it myself. I'm sure you've read it and heard it. Did they go too far?
They probably did for most people. I think if you've never been subjected to that type of stuff, I mean, if you look at how far in distance we are away from when WWE was even running hardcore stuff. I mean, I don't know right offhand, but how long has it been since WWE had a hardcore title?
Now, that's a great question.
Yeah, it's been a while. So, you know, that you think of all the people that have come into this fandom in the past, you know, 10, 12 years that haven't really seen hardcore stuff. You know, if you don't watch a lot of deathmatch stuff, you don't watch a lot of independent stuff, you haven't seen hardcore wrestling in a really long time. And this was kind of this probably did take a lot of people back. And, you know, they were probably thinking, hey, this is probably a little bit more than I bargained for, you know. And you just don't get that exposure. Even when WWE was doing hardcore stuff, it's been a long, long time since you've seen like barbed wire bats and stuff like that. I mean, you got to go way back to see that stuff. So there probably were a lot of people who were watching this, you know, for the first time or started watching AEW when it came out. They haven't really pressed the envelope that much as far as hardcore stuff prior to this either. So I'm sure some people were like, whoa, this is going somewhere where I didn't really think it was going to go. And I don't know exactly how comfortable I am with this. And I can understand. I can understand people thinking that way.
Well, and I think that's the line that AEW has to watch is I feel like, okay, so you've done it once. The jury's still out as to whether it helped your ratings or helped you gain fans or hurt you by turning people off of it. I think that's it's a fine line that they gotta, you know, toe, because, you know, as you mentioned, you know, we've seen things even as recently as a couple of months ago with WWE, but it always tends to be kind of a little more tame. You know, you get the kendo stick from under the ring, you whack somebody around, you know, you're not throwing them in the WWE. You're not throwing them into essentially like a box spring of razor bladed barbed wire, you know? So there's a little bit of a difference in that. And I think for AEW, that's what they got to be careful of. I think that, you know, when they come down to it, just got to watch that line, because I think it's a razor thin line, pun intended, that, you know, is going to either make people flock to AEW or turn the channel.
Well, and you also have to be concerned about, did they perhaps set the bar too high as well?
Oh, you know, yeah.
Are they capable of doing another unsanctioned lights out match where, you know, it's better than this one or just as good without going as crazy or having like feeling the need to go above and beyond this to kind of stick the same point, you know, because it's once you fall into a box spring full of barbed wire, it's, you know, next to lighting a guy on fire, where do you really go from here? You know,
it's right.
Kind of the problem that they could run into, because I'm sure there's some guys on their roster who, after watching this, were probably, you know, the wheels were probably turning, and there's probably a bunch of shit that people want to get in and they want to do. And they want to say, well, if you were okay with ice picks and barbed wire bats, I could do that too. And you know, that's probably the part that they have to watch as well, is, you know, did the bar get set too high? Are people going to try to top this?
To the detriment of their own health.
For sure.
Yeah.
Or to the detriment of the match. You know, it may.
True. Yeah.
It may fall short because you're trying to go above and beyond what was already set.
Yeah. Agreed. So I think coming out of this pay-per-view, obviously tomorrow night on TNT, there's going to be a lot of questions answered as to the direction of some of these individuals and some of the storylines and whatnot. I think that they certainly, coming off this pay-per-view, they got to feel like they have a lot more momentum. And even though last week's ratings between NXT and AEW were more closely, you know, they were much more close than they were in previous weeks. You know, you still got to feel like AEW's got a lot of momentum right now.
Yeah, definitely coming off the heels of this event. I mean, it's definitely have some momentum right now going into whatever they do tomorrow. And just before anybody jumps in your mentions and murders you, you did say Tuesday Night Dynamite three times.
Oh.
I'm not a guy. I'm not a guy that corrects people. I just want you to know if anyone jumps in your missions and starts giving you shit, that's why.
Thanks, Will. You got my back, man. Thanks.
But, you know, and the one thing I'm concerned about tomorrow is that what's the availability going to look like for, you know, I'm not sure. I haven't seen the schedule. I can't remember what town they're in. But, you know, what's the availability of the roster for tomorrow? Because you kind of worked a lot of your guys out of work in a way. I would probably be kind of a little bit upset if I had tickets tomorrow, because like you did mention, they do have some momentum and they got some closure on some things, and maybe they're going a way forward with some other storylines. But you may show up to this event tomorrow and you may not get to see Moxley, Omega, Cody. Well,
Cody's
Rhodes
on the shelf. They've already said he hasn't been medically cleared.
Oh, and I think they said the same thing about Omega, so I'm not sure. But it reminds me of I grew up a long time Knicks fan, and all I ever wanted to do was go to Madison Square Garden, see a Knicks game. And it took me forever to finally get there, finally go. And they had picked up some key free agents. They're supposed to be having a good year, which turned out to be crap. But they had Amari Stoudemire, who was one of my favorite players, and Carmelo Anthony as well. So I finally go to Madison Square Garden, and they both get held out for rest, and I had to watch all the backups, and they got destroyed by Utah by like 30 points. And it kind of dampened the whole event. Going to Madison Square Garden and seeing the Knicks just didn't have that same draw to it. So hopefully tomorrow night, you know, they have more than enough guys or story packages to keep the ball rolling.
Yeah, I think they're in Nashville, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
Don't quote me on that. Well, I mean, hell, I can't remember the day of the week that the show's on, so don't quote me on where they're going to be at tonight, you know, tomorrow night. So
I have a really hard time with that, with as far as like locations of upcoming schedule. If it's not something I'm going to, I never know until they actually, you know, until it actually broadcasts. And I'm like, oh, yeah, they're in, you know, such and such arena or whatever city. But I have no idea. I can never remember that stuff.
Well, this will be a great segue. Where are you going to be in the next few weeks? Because I know that you probably have picked out a few great wrestling shows to go see. And for listeners of the PVD cast, Will and his wife, Christina, they go to a lot of wrestling. Are you going anywhere in the next couple weeks?
Yeah, this coming Friday, we have Revolvers running a show down in Dayton at the Brightside. It's a really cool venue for wrestling. It's not the same venue that Rockstar Pro Wrestling runs. It's completely separate, and Revolver ran there once already. They're running there again this Friday. And then Sami Callihan is also bringing Impact Wrestling to this venue on December 7th, I believe. It's a Saturday. We just bought tickets for that yesterday. So that's coming up. And then we're actually headed back to Massachusetts for the holidays, for Thanksgiving week. and we're going to try to go to another Beyond Wrestling show on Thursday night. I think Thanksgiving night, they're doing Uncharted Territory. We're going to try to go up to that. So that'll be pretty exciting. We went to Beyond Wrestling for New Year's Eve last year, and that was a really, really good show. We hung out and did some stuff afterwards. So hopefully this one will be as sweet. We don't get back up to the Northeast as much since we moved back to Ohio, but this should be a pretty good show. I really like what they do on Thursday nights.
All right, well, you want to plug a few things and let folks know where they can find you on social media and whatnot?
Yeah, on Twitter, you can find me at TheWeaponX, which is W34PONX. One of these days, I am going to get the D removed from there and be just WeaponX like I am on everything else. But it's a slow process. On Instagram, I'm at WeaponX, W34PONX. And I have a On Hiatus podcast as well, which is at Co-Host Wrestling. And that's on Twitter as well. One of these days, I will make a triumphant return and be more consistent. But that day has not come yet.
And man, life sometimes gets in the way of podcasting. I feel you. So, well, Will, dude, thanks for coming on, man, and talking about AEW, Full Gear, and Wednesday Night Dynamite. I finally got it right. But thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
No, thanks for having me, and I look forward to it going up on Twitter, and I will send it out.
You got it. All right, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Before I wrap up this episode, I need to let you know that today's episode was brought to you by World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all of your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, back issues. They got a ton of stuff at their new location, which is 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. You can even find them online at wgcomics.com, or they're also on Facebook, folks. That's right. And who isn't on Facebook anymore? But anyways, they're over there at WG Comics. That's what you got to search for in Facebook, and you will find all the information, all the details that you need. And no matter if you talk to them in person or online, just let them know that you heard about World's Greatest Comics from yours truly, John Orlando, and the PVD cast. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Will and I talking about AEW Full Gear, giving you our honest opinions on the event. So let me tell you where you can get in touch with me in case you want to agree with me or disagree with me on some point. Maybe you want to call me out for constantly saying Tuesday Night Dynamite. I don't know. Whatever, man. You can do that a couple different ways. First of all, you can find me on Twitter with my personal Twitter account of being at PVDMVP. You can leave me a Facebook message if you like, and that's facebook.com/PVDcast. Or you can shoot me an email if you prefer, johnorlando@PVDcast.com. And now, let me just run down all the various different podcast platforms that's carrying the PVD cast. So in case you want to tell somebody, maybe the guy in the cubicle next to you, you want to tell him about the PVD cast, here's where you can find it. PVDcast.com, the online home of yours truly. iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, Spotify, Deezer, iHeartRadio app, Radio.com app, the Echo Network, SoundCloud. Basically, any podcast platform, all you have to do is search for PVDcast, or sometimes you have to throw my name at the end, PVDcast John Orlando, and you're sure to find it. And if you can, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. That helps me out quite a bit. I would greatly appreciate it. Love to see some gigantic 5-star ratings here real soon on iTunes. I would appreciate that. I haven't had some of those in a while, so it make me feel really, really good. But with that, I need to let you know that today's podcast has one more sponsor, and that, of course, is Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/PVDcast. Audible has over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And if you want to get a free audiobook, All you gotta do is simply just go to audibletrial.com/PVDcast, and they will get you hooked up with not only a free audiobook, but also a free 30-day trial. Well, ladies and gentlemen, with that, I'm going to get on out of here. I will chat at each and every one of you later. Thanks for listening, and stay righteous, and stay independent.